This is Damir Barlas of SearchSAP.com. Today we're talking to AtlasTube, an SAP customer whose story holds plenty of lessons for SAP end users everywhere. AtlasTube bought SAP in the 90s when it was a small company. Today, AtlasTube does over $2 billion in revenue but has never had to turn to another ERP provider. Ed Mays, CIO of AtlasTube, talked with us about why his company considered SAP appropriate for small organizations. He also talks about why SAP beat out Oracle and SSA for AtlasTube's business, how SAP scaled along with AtlasTube, why AtlasTube chose Unisys as a systems integrator, why system uptime is strategic for every manufacturing business, and how AtlasTube negotiates with IT vendors. Mays has been a CIO for 13 years, or over six times the length of an average CIO's tenure. Listen to his story, and you'll learn a lot.
So let's begin just with sort of an introduction to AtlasTube. Why don't you tell us a bit about the company, what you guys do, and then we can transition to your IT story from there.
All right. AtlasTube, we are manufacturers of hollow structural steel. We basically produce a product that is tubing, either in round sections or square and rectangle sections, for primarily the structural market. And when I say structural market, not so much in the pure construction of buildings and things like that, but more it'd be almost on a cosmetic layer. But that's not to say that that's all we do. Some of the applications could be as simple as handrails, and other applications could be pilings or support structures for large skyscrapers, building structures for parking garages, and tubular supports for canopies over gas stations, or, you know, signs for Taco Bell or McDonald's, things like that.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, it sounds that, like, as a manufacturer, you're pretty much in SAP's sweet spot. So let's sort of move over into that discussion and talk about, you know, your history with SAP. When did you guys sort of get involved? What products are you using? What kind of overview can you give us there?
Okay. We basically went down the path. There was an RFQ for a product. We had an in-house ERP package, and the company started out relatively small. It was privately owned, and we barely did maybe, you know, $50 million worth of business a year. And we came to the realization that we, you know, the owners had a plan that we needed to grow the business, and we had to take opportunity of various other lines of business. But we needed an IT infrastructure that could easily support that. And one of the key things that we looked at was an ERP package. So we looked at several products, and to be honest with you, SAP was probably on our unlikely list, and the only reason is that we were such a small company, and we thought that SAP was somewhat out of our league, and it was all based on timing. At that time, SAP were looking at customers, you know, anything from $150 million or less to start up a CBS program where they would be looking at, you know, potential customers like us. So what we did was we did finally negotiate with SAP because they had the best proposal and the most effective cost structure for us to engage in, and we went with SAP version 3OC, and that was back in the late 90s. And here we are today. We've been using it for, you know, 10 plus years, and we've learned that it's a powerful package, and I truly believe that the success of the company has a lot to do with the software packages that we're using. We went from a $75 million company, and in 10 years, we now have sales in excess of $2 billion. And what we've implemented is most of the core products within SAP is FI, CO, SD, WM, MM, PM, and that's all within the current release of 4.6b, and we have just recently implemented CRM, and we use components of our newly acquired software, which is SAP ECC 6.0 Enterprise, and we're gradually working on a upgrade, and we are implementing some of the suite elements within that package.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly have a lot of questions I'd like to dig down into that. One place I'd like to begin with is having so much functionality and having gone through upgrades and planning upgrades. Let's talk a little bit about partners and systems integration. What kind of resources are needed to be able to take on SAP at this level? What has been the role of outside partners versus in-house? How did you guys get that done?
Well, one of the biggest challenges with SAP at first is that we needed a technology partner that could provide us with equipment that could run it. I mean, it was almost like a Ferrari in a sense that we needed a finely tuned engine just to keep it going. And we had some failed moments throughout the years. We went with various technology partners, and it just didn't cut the mustard. We finally came upon Unisys, where we had a vision. One of the most important things that we needed to do is we wanted to provide increased reliability of our systems, particularly in the production of our products. And that's what we do well here is that we have effective use of our capacity to produce these products. So we had a tightly integrated shop floor system that tied into SAP. And any disconnects or interrupts within the manufacturing process, we would end up losing capacity to produce our product. It's a commodity, and every hour that we were down, we could potentially lose $250,000 of potential product that we could be selling. So we needed reliability, redundancy, and we needed a good method of data recovery. So that was what set in motion our RFQ for a manufacturer of the equipment and solutions involved on the software side to support that.
Now let's talk about that in a little bit more detail. I'd like to understand how each of those components is addressed, because there's so much that can fail, right? I mean, you can have the software fail, you can have a device fail, you can have the device fail to talk to the software. So, like, what is it like to manage all of these moving parts?
Because we were real time, that was one of the key issues. Because we used SAP on a real-time basis, there was no batch processing. Everything that we do on the plant floor, all the reporting we do, was all real-time. There was a large number of applications that we had that would basically had to all tie in. With SAP as a solution, we were able to provide functionality on the plant floor and also within the administration office with respect to shipping and billing and invoicing and all the financial aspects, and that was all real-time. It was all running at once. So we had a huge demand on the reliability, because basically it's one big chain, and your chain is only as good as your weakest link. And unfortunately, any one of those components relied on everything else. So if there was any weak areas, we were doomed for failure. And one of the big things is that because it was such a large, I would say, monster in a sense, we needed the equipment that could drive that. And we needed a lot of horsepower there, but we also needed reliability in that equipment. So that's where we were falling short. We basically learned a lot from our mistakes.
Let's talk a bit about those, because, you know, we're going to have people tuning in who want to avoid some of those mistakes. I mean, what would you rank as, like, some of those leading mistakes, and then what were the learnings that came out of those?
Well, some of the biggest mistakes were that don't be fooled by the fact that, you know, you think you might have a good solution. We always thought that we had good backup, a good recovery strategy, but we didn't realize how good it was until we put it to the test. And that test may have not been our choice. That was basically a failure on our part, where the system had crashed, the existing system, and we went through our strategy for recoverability and backup, but it took us 24 hours to do so. And within that 24 hours, our company lost millions of dollars. So we had to sit back and look and say, all right, well, what's our tolerance? And we said, okay, we can't tolerate more than a four-hour window of downtime. So that's how it all started. We started on looking at what we needed to do to basically build up our backup and recovery strategy and allow us to have that 4 hour of accessible downtime. And we didn't really know where to start because what we thought we had was fine wasn't.
In terms of sort of the SAP contribution to that, you know, people will be wanting to know, is this something that's sort of distinct from the package that you have, or is whatever package you have sort of closely tied into your disaster strategy? Do you know what I mean? Is sort of the management distinct from the application logic, or is it all tied in together?
It's all tied in together.
And so let's talk a bit more about the management of that, and maybe we can bring in Unisys again. I mean, is Unisys sort of the one, you know, one neck to choke if things go wrong? Do they do all of the managing? How do you guys participate, and how do you sort of communicate back and forth, you know, with your IT responsibilities and them?
Well, yeah, they're on the hardware platform, tied in with SAP. I mean, they on the basis component, they had the knowledge and the experience of keeping SAP running in a finely tuned manner, performance wise, and running on a platform that if any hardware broke, that SAP would still be running. Now, as for SAP as a solution to our business, I'm thinking, if that's where the question's kind of going, you're trying to say, you know, how has SAP provided us with you know, solutions in the ongoing business here. They at the time, they had all their existing solutions were best of breed. We had to do some changes here to change the way we did business. We considered it was a good canned solution for a lot of areas. We didn't require a lot of development like we did in the other previous package that we were running. We didn't require a lot of support aspects. We felt it was as long as we utilized the methods that SAP provided to us, we felt that we could grow much, much quicker. Sure, there was an introductory phase of the software where we actually had to hire more people. But from that point on, as we grew as a company, we have very few people that support the application. And up till this date, we found that in the long term, we've been provided with software that we haven't had to throw a lot of bodies at it.
Mm-hmm. When you were conducting the diligence that led to Unisys, was SAP a player in that? Because they certainly do have, you know, help, support, consulting options, but it would be helpful to know if they also had options within what you guys wanted to do, or did they not have that?
No, I don't think there wasn't a huge role there. I think they have good relationships with all the vendors, not only Unisys, but some of the other big players that we went with. RFQ was we went with IBM and Dell, and we were looking at their solutions. They all had great support from SAP, and they all had good solutions that were on the SAP platforms, and they all work closely with them. So, yeah, I think it was fair to say that there was some involvement there, but I think these were all predetermined mechanisms that they had provided to us that had already been working with SAP.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back to something, you know, you said earlier. You said this sort of the test was forced upon you when something failed. And I imagine there are a lot of people who don't necessarily think about disaster recovery as being strategic unless some catastrophe happens. What would you say to people whose systems have been working well for them so far and who think, well, this is an unneeded cost, you know, it's tough economic times, I don't want to invest in this? What would you say to someone like that?
I think they're just gambling with the business. That's what we did. We gambled for a long time, and it took about 8 years before our luck ran out. And because of it, it was very costly. And I think that anybody that says that, you know, that operate this way, it's a huge risk. And it's almost like life insurance. I mean, what good is life insurance? I guess it's only good if you die. Well, our system died. And we looked at it as a, it's an amount of money that you need to invest, and it is like life insurance. You may never die. So you might sit back and say, did I really need this?
That's a good metaphor. I really like that. Let's talk a bit about costs, which is something that's also in the mind of a lot of ERP users and just, you know, companies in general. How do you negotiate to try and sort of get the best deal, right? I mean, you're an older SAP user. It's been 10 years. You've had these relationships. And there's sort of this tension between vendors who are trying to grow their margins right now, and they're trying to charge a bit more money, and, you know, end users are trying to keep those costs down. So, I mean, is there anything that you can sort of reveal on that front?
With respect to the hardware platform, SAP platform, or?
You know, everything in your IT, I'm just speaking generally about your IT stack.
Do you want me to be honest on our negotiating technique? I'll give you one thing that we used to do, and we do it, and we still do it today. I call it good cop, bad cop. It's based on an interrogation. We would have one person on our team that would be pro one ERP or hardware vendor, and we'd have another person on our team who would be totally against it. And we would internally project that we were on the fence between the two products or the two providers. Hmm. And that's what we would project against them. And it's amazing how you get them involved in trying to compete against their own competitors and providing you with a best solution possible, and also to at the end of the day, you need an affordable cost. And that's not to say you go with the cheapest. We definitely did not go with the cheapest, but you have to look at what they're delivering and the solutions that they're giving you, and that's how we used to portray it.
Mm-hmm. That's a helpful tip. I'm sure a lot of people can use that. Were you involved in the decision to go with SAP originally? I mean, I know we said that was sort of in the late 90s. Were you there at that time?
Yes. Yes.
Well, that's really interesting. Maybe we should talk about CIO longevity and its relation to the success of certain projects. I mean, I don't have to tell you there's really a revolving door in a lot of environments for CIOs. You're having been there for at least this length of time. How do you think that kind of continuity plays into the success of IT projects?
Well, when it all comes right down to it, I mean, I read an article once that they said the average tenure of a CIO was 2 years. So what does that tell you? I'm thinking I'm still here after, 12, 13 years, and I'll be honest with you, it's not necessarily mean that, are we doing everything right? A lot of it has to do with luck. I mean, you have to believe in certain things, and you have to go with your gut feel. I think we were, in one sense, it was a huge risk to go with SAP, but I think it was a risk that paid off. And there's a certain element of just being lucky here. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I don't know what else to call it. And the reason why I'm saying it is that just prior to us signing with SAP, a week prior, we were about to sign with another company. And within 1 week, we changed our minds. So it's hard to put a finger on how to pick the right package and who's the best player and things like that. I don't know. I'll be honest with you, and maybe Kirk can add on to this. I think that in a lot of cases we've been lucky so far, and things have just gone our way.
And it's interesting that you say that, and certainly that's an element. I'm just curious, the vendor that you didn't go with, are they still around today, or are they one of the folks who folded?
No, they're one of all the vendors that we've picked with. There's only a couple that still exist. Most of them don't exist anymore. Or they exist in basically small. SSA was one of them. We were looking at Bond being another one. We were looking at Oracle. But that Oracle was in its infancy back then, so they didn't really have as much to offer. I mean, their financials were strong, but that's basically all they had. I mean, SAP really only came to the table with a good integrated package that pretty well covered all components of the business that we wanted to use. And also their pre-sales were pretty, they were very good. They invested a lot of time and effort and people to actually give us a demo and demonstrate to us that SAP could run our business. And they were the only ones that successfully, in a short period of time, showed us that.
Mm-hmm. Over the years, as you've expanded, you've added all this new, this new SAP functionality. Have there been new challenges associated with development, customization? I know you said that initially, there was a big emphasis on the fact that it was canned. You could just get it going out of the box. But you guys have been changing. You've been growing. And,
yes.
I'm sure business has been changing. So what are, the new development and customization challenges associated with that?
Well, one of the rules that we tried to set in place within our group is that we try not to customize anything. I mean, we will investigate any new business requirements, and we will propose standard SAP functionality. Now, obviously, there are things within our business that we do completely different, and in within those areas, we'll end up customizing or writing at least customer exits within the SAP code that they just don't provide that functionality. But we didn't realize how much customization we did until we actually went through the upgrade process of ECC 6.0 from our 4.6b, and we were pleasantly surprised in comparison to the industry. We only had possibly maybe a 1,000 objects that were changed, and of those 1,000, maybe 300 were key elements that we had to identify and make sure that these were custom-written apps that had to work with our new system. I mean, in general, we found that a lot of companies could have as much as 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 enhancements of custom-written code. And these are the people that go through upgrades that may take, anywhere from 7, months to a year and a half. And when we estimate our upgrade, which should only take us about 4 months.
Very nice. And that's also helpful for a lot of folks to know. Well, Ed, that's all the questions that I had. Is there anything that just in parting you want to mention that we haven't talked about or, bring out something that we have talked about? Any conclusions?
Maybe some of the lessons. I know there's a lesson learned within SAP, too. We found that, and we're not a minority here. I think the majority of people, and from what I can see, and a lot of the colleagues that are within the same business of using SAP, was that we were not very good at applying updates and hot packs and periodic enhancements to our levels. And because of it was like we shot ourselves in the foot, because it tended to cause us to have to write customized code within SAP that we didn't have to if we just kept up with it. And we got so far behind that it caused us a lot of grief. So what we've done is we've changed our strategy. So if anybody can basically put the strategy in place that you have continuous upgrades within SAP, and I'm talking hot packs and fixes, if you can keep that up, then your future needs within the business and how you want to grow with that package is going to be so much easier.
And there you have it. Lessons learned from a longtime SAP customer that will continue to be relevant to other SAP end users and prospects. Thanks for listening.